was recorded on the 9th of August, 1966. Me, Dim, Leslie, Flynn.
Your visit.
It's very kind of you, Mickey.
You're a case, aren't you?
Yes, you say so.
Well, you are, really. Am I? Know you are. Mm-hmm. I like you.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yes, somebody likes me.
Oh, I think most people. I think everybody who really knows you likes you, because some people are stupid, you know. I mean, well, I could say a lot, but I think you're nice.
Oh, thank you, Mickey. Isn't that lovely? What's the thing?
Very nice.
I shall treasure those words.
Hello, my dear.
Hello, darling.
I was listening to our young friend.
Yes?
Actually, when one says our young friend, rather depends what one means or one understands by young.
Yes, of course.
One refers to him as one's young friend because he comes back, that is, to your side of life as some sort of replica, if I can put it like that, of himself when on earth. But of course he's a much, much older and wiser person. Indeed, he's very adult.
Yes.
But when we return to Earth, to some extent we are affected by Earth conditions, and we assume, if only temporarily, our old self as far as we can, often for evidential purposes, for recognition. But of course I think most people realize that when we have been away from Earth for some time, as you term time, we progress, we learn a great deal, our minds are more open, we are in consequence affected by all manner of thoughts, actions, conditions, environments, that in consequence we become much more progressed and of course in many ways vastly changed and different from our old self as we were known on Earth. I think a lot of people are inclined, even spiritualists who profess to understand this truth, are inclined to forget that with the passing of time, no change in experience, we must alter.
Yes.
I mean, for instance, people come back and communicate, endeavoring to give their evidence as best they can by drawing on past memory and experience, but quite often it's an effort, and indeed sometimes it can be, in some instances, an unpleasant experience, because there's so much in the past, which once no doubt was important, which no longer has the same meaning, and certainly is not of any great value. The only thing, of course, that really matters to us in regard to the past, to our earthly lives, is the love and the affection and the endearing moments, the endearing affections that we have for individuals, and, of course, for the better aspects of our nature, which occasionally shone out of the darkness, you might say, of materialism in which we were once steeped. But there are many, many things appertaining to the old way of life which we are quite happy to forget. And sometimes these material things are necessary to be revived in memory temporarily as evidential means of proof, communication. But you know, sometimes when I come back to you, I look back on my own life and I see it, in a sense, perhaps as a pattern. It's rather like a sort of tapestry which, at the time, one is making stitches and one can't see the full effect of it. It's not until you are over here and you look back and you see the whole thing with all its varying hues, with all its shadows and its brighter moments. In other words, it's no doubt, and I'm sure it is and must be essential and necessary, to go through all the many experiences that one does experience, good, bad, and indifferent. And of course I can appreciate only too well that you cannot have light without shade. You couldn't appreciate light unless you had the darker portions to show it up in relief. If it were all night, it would be, to some extent, you might say, of little value, or you wouldn't be able to assess it. Indeed, it may well be that it would be a nothingness. I think people are inclined to forget on earth that it is important and necessary to suffer. I know that there's a great deal of suffering that's unnecessary and which should be and could be eradicated from human lives, from life generally, and from the world. There are many major ills which need not be and which do really fundamentally no good whatsoever, but there are certain things which happen and must happen, no doubt, and no doubt without them happening one couldn't evolve.
Yes.
You see, I think this business that some people seem to have in their makeup of what is generally termed evil, it isn't a word I'm fond of, but it is a word that is operative in as much as it depicts. But there are certain aspects of the opposite, shall I say, to good, which seem to me to be essential. For instance, if one were living in a perfect world, living some form of life which was perfect as far as one can understand the meaning of the term perfect, it could be, and must be, by the very nature of it, in a sense, a useless, pointless, formless, nebulous sort of existence. Now this may shock some people, particularly people of a religious turn of mind, or even those who like to consider themselves spiritually inclined. But I think if you can get down to rock bottom and analyze this, I think it is vital and important for people to realize that you must have, to some extent, light and shade, as in a picture. If it were flat, it would be of no value. It would have no highlights, it would have no sort of depth, it would have no meaning, it would have no form, no real shape. So it is with human lives. I think that we must see ourselves as a product of the infinite mind. And at the same time, we are given, like an artist, if you like, series of colours, the primary colours. We are given the brushes, we are given the canvas, and we live to ourselves, to our own sort of intuition, to our own inclination, to our own ability. And everyone has this ability within themselves to overcome, to achieve, to, as it were, produce something from within their innermost self, to be creative. But the thing is to be creative with one's own soul, as it were, to be creative with one's own power, to realize that within oneself is the possibility of tremendous power, tremendous ability, tremendous achievement. I think Christ knew this. I think that all the great prophets and all the great teachers must have known this fact that within oneself was the great possibility of overcoming and achieving. I'm sure, absolutely certain, that the true meaning of the life of Christ is the example that he set and the achievement that he made is what he himself realized was possible for all human life. In other words, that we ourselves, if I can use the expression of the saviors of ourselves,
Yes, you were saying that last time. Dear, may I just interrupt? You were going to tell me more about that incarnation when you're a monk. You said you would like to tell me more about it. You're coming to England and Glastonbury.
Yes, that's true.
I was so thrilled.
Sorry if I deviated, but...
Yes, that was very interesting, but you did say you would like to finish that story of your life in the early Renaissance. I was so thrilled to think that you actually came to Glastonbury.
I came to Glastonbury and stayed for a time for two reasons. One was that I was interested in visiting other countries. I wanted to see how the brothers were faring, in, not only in England but in other places, two other countries. And also, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I was tremendously interested in what you would call chemistry. I was very interested in many things, actually. I was very interested in medicine.
Yes, you were telling me about
and
that.
I was anxious to see and to find out the new ways in which one might be able to cure illness. And I'd heard also of certain herbs, certain products which had been brought into being by monks in Glasgow.
Oh, really? I didn't
and,
know that.
And you see, I understood that there were other natural sources that one might draw upon for producing various, what I suppose in modern parlance would be drugs, modern terminology. And I was interested in meeting others of a like mind who were interested in astrology too. I know this sounds strange, but I was interested in so many different things, and I was particularly anxious to find out more about the way of life of the people of different countries, and I came to Glastonbury for various very good reasons.
How did you come across?
Over by water.
Yes, I mean, did you, must have been a dreadful journey.
Well, yes and no. I suppose in a way, in comparison with methods of communication, travel today in England, in the world, I mean, it, coming to England was in those days hazardous to say the least, but somehow I always liked to wander, I always liked to travel, and walking never worried me. And I made my way by foot to France, to Calais.
Oh, where did you leave your horse?
I didn't say I rode a horse, although it is true that there were times when I did.
I see.
What made you mention a horse?
Well, you said you went about on horseback a good deal.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
But that rather depended on the circumstances and the situation.
Yes.
And I don't think it's easy to explain, or certainly easy to understand. But the point is that one horse, unless there was plenty of opportunity for rest, could do such a journey. It was a common thing to change horses and to leave horses and to take another horse in exchange. But if I was travelling any very long distance, quite often I would walk. This may sound odd to you, but at the same time, depending on the circumstances, I would walk or I would ride. Sometimes I would go a long distance by horse, perhaps taking weeks. But I travelled to England and eventually stayed some, I think as far as I can tell, some year or two at Glastonbury. And this was in his early infancy, his early years, his formative years. And I learned a great deal from the monks there. And also, there was a strange form of printing which had never been known before on the continent. Because you know in those days manuscripts were all done by hand.
Yes, of course.
But there was a monk there who had brought into being not, of course, as you understand it today, but he was a scientifically minded individual, and he was trying to bring into being this sort of method. And it was, to some extent, used, but I didn't know if any of these manuscripts, I think hardly be called books, although they were bound, still exist. Of course, Caxton brought out the first printing press.
Yes. Can you throw any light on the Holy Grail, dear, the legendary cup? Did you hear anything about it when you were there?
Well, of course, these things spring from truths, but like all truths, over centuries of time, much is added. Much is subtracted. In fact, much more, of course, is added. It's like a story that goes round. By the time you receive it back again, it's very much changed from its original.
Yes.
And there are fundamental truths in this business of the Holy Grail, but I'm afraid rather different to the general story as told.
You don't think Joseph of Arimathea brought the cup that Christ drank the Last Supper?
No.
It's rather earlier than that, isn't it? Yes. Something very ancient, mystic.
But there's no doubt about it that there were many in the very early formative years of the Christian religion and church. There were many souls who did travel the whole world, known world, and who did set up and did create groups and churches.
Yes.
But of course, so much has been added, so much legend has been accepted, more or less,
yes,
by those fact, that there were some remarkable men.
Yes.
And they were, when one considers that in those years, in those days, a man's lifespan was perhaps 40, 45, 50 years on the outside, with exceptional circumstances. There were people who lived to be 80, but they were very exceptional. And there was so much disease.
Yeah.
There was so much illness of varying degrees. Most of it was due, of course, to the unhygienic conditions and lack of knowledge. And I was tremendously interested in medicine. I studied, I experimented, and indeed I realized that in my own fashion, in my own way, I achieved no doubt quite a good deal, and much that I discovered and left behind was used for centuries and no doubt still is in some instances used.
Yes, you were saying your books were burnt down in the fire.
Well, yes, they were burnt down, but nevertheless, you see, a lot of these remedies and things were memorized by the monks, and since I traveled a great deal, many of my ideas were copied in other monasteries, other monks who studied medicine, have worked on my theories and used some of my products and so on. I mean, the whole point is that a lot of things that I found, discovered, were kept for centuries, and I'm sure still are.
Yes, what was your order, darling? What, do you remember the order you were? Were you abbot or prior, or were you just...
Well, I was just a lay brother, but I did become what you call a prior, eventually.
Not Benedictine, was it? No, to be, those are the black monks. I went over a Benedictine monastery yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Which one was there?
Well, we have one in a little village quite near to Eastbourne. Wilmington. But you said you met St. Francis. You weren't a Franciscan, were you?
No. And yet I had great sympathy for the Franciscans. They had great problems, very difficulties in their early formative years, had a great deal to combat, and in some senses, some of the orders, I won't say dislike them, but weren't too happy about them.
Yeah.
St. Francis was very much in his time, although beloved by his own brothers, was very much, I don't like to use the word disliked, but not altogether trusted by many of the others. You know, I suppose...
He wasn't orthodox, was he?
No, see, that's the point. There was I hate to say this, but there's no getting away from the truth, and that there was, between the different orders, a certain amount of pettiness and jealousy.
Yes.
Strange as it may seem.
Yes.
And then again, this goes back centuries, when one realizes that human nature hasn't changed all that much. A person may be very sincere in their belief and in their religion and endeavor to follow it out to the very letter. It doesn't alter the fact that the human element is there, and you get the pettiness and sometimes the unpleasantness associated where people differ.
Yes. Did you go back to Italy?
Oh, yes.
You did.
Oh, I went to Spain, to Italy, to Germany, as it is called now, and many countries.
It was a very interesting incarnation, wasn't it?
I think it was probably one of my most useful ones.
Yes.
And most helpful ones. I always feel that in that period of time, I achieved perhaps more up to that time than any other.
Yes.
I can see myself so clearly. It's as if I know I don't compare myself to a diamond, but like a faceted diamond with all the different angles which constitute the whole.
Yes.
I think all human lives are of course like that, but every human life when one realizes that one has had incarnations and that each incarnation is a facet and that we are many faceted, and it's not until we have become more or less, I don't say complete, because that can never be, I suppose, there's always something fresh and new to understand or strive for to become a little more perfected. But I feel as if we are like uncut diamonds. You know, I see you in such a different light. I don't mean by that you have changed, or although in a sense I have changed, of course, but I see you not as I remember you in this present incarnation of yours, but in others. I see you much more as a complete soul. I don't know how to explain this.
Yes.
I know one thing, that we were obviously brought together for a very real purpose, and that we shall be together, and that we shall grow together, closer, mentally and spiritually, become more one, although retaining our own individual character and personality to some extent that will persist, but I can see a more complete picture than ever I could before of
yes.
my lives.
Yes, of course.
I always want you to feel that in spite of my growth mentally and spiritually, in spite of the experiences that I have had and may yet have, in spite of all the evolution that must take place with every human being and myself in particular in this instance, it doesn't separate us, it brings us closer together. The more my knowledge is, the greater my realization is.
Yes.
The more it helps you and brings us nearer to each other. Never think I'm going away from you.
Oh, that's lovely to know that, darling. But what incarnation are you going to tell me about next?
I don't know.
I know about your priest.
I think there's so much I've got to tell you, but I must tell it you in my own way, obviously,
yes.
And I must think about it and try to recapture. You see, it's not always difficult, not always possible to recount something on the spur of the moment.
No, of course
when
not.
You say to me, so-and-so, so-and-so,
mm-hmm.
It's as if it breaks the trend of my thought, and I have to try and think back, and best to let me give you as I get it, as my feeling is and impression is and memory serves me.
Yes, of
best
course.
Best to be like that.
Yes.
Anyway, I'll see you when you come again.
Yes, I hope, Mr. Leslie will
anyway,
be able to let me come.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye,
dear.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Mickey.
He's interesting.
Yes, there he is.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. It's very good today, wasn't
yes.
it? I think it's marvellous, you know.
He has
a wonderful flow of language.
He has.
Was he like that on earth?
Yes. Yes, he was.